Welcome to the Tag Republic podcast, a weekly chat with Carolina Guzik about all things marketing. Some episodes are short tips that you can implement in your business right away, while others are in-depth conversations with industry leaders. Whether you're a new photographer searching for some knowledge or an established professional with years of experience, Carolina offers fresh and innovative advice that can help you transform your photography business.
This episode is sponsored by The Art of Pinning, a self-paced Pinterest class for wedding and lifestyle photographers. If you are having a hard time driving traffic into your website, or SEO is overwhelming you, or the people that are visiting your website are not the kind of visitors, aka they're not converting into clients, then this class is for you. You can find more information at www.thetalkrepublic.com/Pinterest, or just follow the link in the notes. Now, enjoy this episode. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Tag Republic. I'm Carolina Guzik, your host, and today, all the way from Canada, Bobby Barbridge is here. Bobby, how are you?
Thank you for having me. It was a long trek going, like, diagonally across the country to get to you. Across the continent to get to you.
It was. But here we are. And a question that I have to ask every single Canadian that mm-hmm. comes through this podcast. Mm-hmm. Do you say herbs or herbs?
Oh, you know what? As a Canadian, I struggle with this one. I say herbs.
Okay.
Yes. But like, do Americans say herbs?
No, we always say herbs. Yeah.
And do you think...
No, I watched this TV show with like a Canadian chef and he always says herbs. So I'm like, I need to ask my Canadian friend. And it seems that people from like Calgary, they say herbs. But it seems like people from like Ontario, they say herbs.
And that makes sense because people who are more comfortable or who are more exposed to French would say herbs.
Oh.
Because in French, you don't pronounce the H.
Uh-huh.
And so people who are completely unilingual and didn't pay any attention in junior high French. Not saying all Calgarians are like that, but.
Calgarians, please stick to this episode. It's getting better.
But no, I think that would come from people who are just more comfortable with knowing French. Got it.
Yeah, well, it's always a point of content here on this podcast. How, you know, and Canadians, please, you know, slide in my DM, send me an audio. I don't know.
Well, I hope that I can like put a resolution to this because it's a pressing problem.
It is. Keep me up at night.
Yes. And there's also basil and basil, right?
Oh, yes, it is.
Yes.
And color and what's the other way that you say colors?
Color. See, we like to add a U to neighborhood, color, savor, like anything that has an OR.
Yes.
We like to throw a U in there.
I do like the way aesthetically how it looks.
I agree.
I think it looks very pretty.
I totally agree.
Well, this is not a linguistic podcast, so we are going to get back in track. And before we want to start, what about you? Introduce yourself. You tell us all about you and what do you do?
I am a documentary wedding and family photographer. I live in a little city of 10,000 in South Central British Columbia. Mm-hmm. And I am a podcaster and a photography coach. I've been doing the coaching for a few years and I have been being a photographer for over a decade now, depending on when I decided to start calling myself a photographer. But yeah, that's generally my world. In terms of where I kind of specialize as a coach, I really enjoy helping people find what makes them unique mm-hmm. and encourage them to really display that in what their work is, because we get so pulled into comparing ourselves to other people and wanting to get inspired by mm-hmm. other photographers, but that can really infringe on our own perspectives, and then we can kind of get lost. So my Absolutely. Zone of genius is really helping people feel confident in putting that uniqueness out there.
This, I mean, as I mentioned, I always have like a set questions, but then things happen in conversations, and now I have, you know, other questions. First of all, like how do you do that? Because technically, I understand the concept of like your uniqueness, this and that. But if I am, and this is my personality, I am very pragmatic, and I am a little bit on the dry side, right?
So if I see,
like I understand the concept of uniqueness, and I myself give all the pep talks, like you're unique, this and that. And then when I look at the pragmatic things, I'm like, you know, we're comparing tomatoes to tomatoes. This is the same thing, red, round. What's really like?
Yeah,
like to that is dive such, a little bit deeper into this.
Such a good question. It usually takes my students a good 3 months to figure it out. So it's not an easy answer, but we always start by considering something that is ever present in their life since they were as like it showed up as when they were a kid, and it's still there as an adult. So there, we all have specific traits. I call them gifts that continually become part of what we contribute to the world. So my idea, my philosophy is that we are all kind of born with a gift, and our life experiences develop the skills it takes for us to use that gift. And in our artwork and our businesses, ideally we give that gift away. And that's the perspective that we have because we have that gift and because we have these very unique experiences that comes out in our art. And if we do the work to be really honest to find out what that gift is and give ourselves the time and space to actually see that it is showing up in our work and then showing that work, then it helps us to further build and sustain that perspective. And that is what makes us unique. Does that make sense?
Yeah, obviously it makes sense. But what if the gift is not the final art? I would say it's always the final art, the gift?
It's part of the art.
Okay.
It's part of it. Yes. I think it's always present if you're being true to your art. So that's where we also have to work with comparison games that we have, and imposter syndrome, and all of these things that these social pressures that push us to be the same as other people, because as a species, we want to fit in, right? Like that is like a survival mechanism, that we want to be like others, right? But if you want to be a successful business person or successful artist, and both, you have to do what's different. You have to stand out. You have to push against those impulses to allow your work to be impressed upon by what other people are doing.
But here, like, my very dry personality is gonna kick in. Like,
I love it. I love it.
Like, really, future clients, right, are just looking at Instagram. They know nothing about photography. They know nothing about you. They know nothing about me. At the end of the day, we have the result, which is a photo. How could they see my personality in it? How could they see, you know? And I understand technically, right, if you're super documentary and then you get somebody that is more editorial, let's say, aesthetically, you can see immediately the difference, right? But it doesn't mean that you're understanding the gift that photographer has or what that would mean for you on your wedding day, unless you're really tuning into photography, right? I think that like a normal person will be just like, I like and I don't like kind of a thing. Not really like detail of this. No, am I wrong?
No, I think that isn't really like a very excellent point, which actually supports my point of being as unique as you are. Like really grabbing that, embracing it, and confidently showing it consistently through your copy, through the photos that you're making on your website, everything. It's the whole package through your how you present yourself. People, the reason they're not understanding just by looking at one photo is because you're not showing it. And you're not showing it consistently. And if people are going to be drawn to your, to the reason why you're here, like the reason why you've shown up in their feed is because you have something to offer them. Mm-hmm. If you look like everyone else, they're not going to be able to see it. But if they consistently see that the thing that is drawing them in, then they're going to be intrigued and they're going to reach out and they are going to try to form a bond with you and all like the cascade of things that happens once you have attracted someone's attention.
I love this concept as a marketer and also as a photographer, right? But mm-hmm. it's like I understand it, like mm-hmm. I can break it down in like my very strategic brain, but yeah. sometimes like the explaining for me is like yeah. a little bit
and
of
I
like
I love that, like trying to find yeah. the places where logic and art mm-hmm. meld is so beautiful. Have you read the book Braiding Sweetgrass?
No.
Okay, everybody listening to this, please pick up that book. It is so incredibly beautiful. It is about a woman who, she's an Indigenous woman. She was raised by a white family. So her, and like raised very much in like a scientific mindset, mm-hmm. but she always had this calling for art, to understand botany through an artistic lens. Mm-hmm. And so her life, this book is about her, all these short stories that demonstrate periods in her learning where she could meld logic or science mm-hmm. with art. And it's so illuminating and inspiring and motivating and really makes clear that yes, they belong together. Art and science, or like art and logic, art and business, they belong together. And we can dovetail them. And when we do, that's when we're truly successful or fulfilled, right?
I see. I don't want to get this book. It sounds really pretty.
Yes. Yeah, it is incredible. Oops, I just pulled out my light.
The light came on. Yes. A very metaphorical, you know.
Yeah. And we're done.
I love it. So the title of this episode is How to Shoot Better Candidates, right? Yes. To book more clients. Yeah. I'm going to be 100% honest. I am not really great at candidates. Mm-hmm. 100 representation of my personality.
Yeah.
And 100 representation of like my own fears yeah. that I project on my clients, right?
Yes. Like, oh my God. Like, I love that you're saying that. Yeah.
I can, you know, like analyze myself really good. Then yeah. like the coming into the practice that comes to it. But I do love candidates, mm-hmm. but it's like for me, right? Like mm-hmm. I always pick second shooters that are really strong at candidates because I'm like, yeah. I know they can get this done for me really, really well, but yeah. I can focus on what I can do really well, which is, you know, my personality. I'm a little bit more structured. I need a little bit more organized, but I also yeah. think that if I allow myself, I think that I could be good at it because I like observing people.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this. Oh, no.
let me ask you, why do you love candidates? What do you love about them?
The moment, right? It's just like, oh, it was so pretty. It was imposed. You know, it was happening. And it's really funny because like I grew up with my grandpa and he loved photography. But he loved the idea of a candid, but he himself could never, let's say I would get my camera out and I'm like, hey, look at me. He's like, no, I'm looking to the side. So it looks like I'm not looking. And I love it because then all the photos, like he's trying to be candid, but they look very,
yeah,
you know, like very staged. So like, I like the concept of a candid, but.
Let's dive in a little bit here. Like the concept of it. Do you love that? That you don't have to set it up, or do you love that it's something that is fleeting, or what do you think?
I think it's like the moment, right? Like the moment. And when I take a look at photos, even on my childhood, things like that, we have very little Colombians. We culturally don't take that many photos. Mm-hmm. So I don't have that many pictures of my childhood, nothing like that. Mm-hmm. So the the majority of the photos that I have are very everybody looking at the camera, like very structured. Yeah. But there is like one or two that is candid that I'm like, I love it. But yeah. then again, yeah. in my brain, it's also like, but we have all these structured photos that we also love.
So I might hazard a guess that it's because it's you're drawn to like the freshness of it. It's something different. It's not something that has an external input. It's just something that you got because like it happened rather yeah. than making it happen.
Yeah. But now as a photographer, like I just took my favorite photo. I went to Canada last week. My sister's living in Canada. And I just took like my favorite photo with my niece. And uh-huh. I think that this photo, like I just look at it and like I can see myself in 50 years looking at that photo.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah,
like
yeah.
this is going to be my very photo. It looked candid, but uh-huh. it wasn't a candid moment.
Okay, so how are those different to you? How was it not a candid moment?
It's not a candid, like I saw my little niece, she's like putting like her lipstick, like looking super pretty in the mirror, you know, like teenagers nowadays, they have like these huge mirrors with like, it looks very yes. like.
Lights everything.
Like, exactly, lights everything. I am extremely organized. She's not. So she has like, her counter is shenanigans. Everything is on the counter. She has pretty, she's 15, but she could be a professional makeup artist. I have never seen that amount of makeup on a normal human being yeah. that is not a professional. So she has every single piece of makeup that you don't even need. She has it all on the counter. Her hair is gorgeous. Like she looks fantastic. And I'm just like taking a photo in the mirror. So like mm-hmm. you only see, you know, me taking the photo and her kind of like posing. It looks in my mind very kind of like maybe even 80s, like a photographer photographing a model, like behind the scenes.
Very cool. Yeah.
So
yeah.
it looks cool. She looks gorgeous. So obviously she's going to love it because she's like, I look so great. I yeah. think that it showcased a little bit of my, you know, like me photographing her because I love her so much.
Yeah.
But obviously it wasn't like I just pick up my camera and did it. I saw the moment. I saw that she yeah. was doing the lipstick. I'm like, this is going to be really cool. Let me go get my camera. So
yeah.
is it really a candid moment? I don't know. Is it? Is it a yeah. candid moment? Is it like
I mean, if we're going to be sticklers, I would say... no.
Correct, right? Because it yeah. she knew the photo was happening. I knew the photo was happening. So yeah. I don't think it was really a candid moment. Now, if somebody were to see that photo, I think that they would think like, oh, it happened so natural.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't.
Well, I mean, it was natural because it was happening, right?
Yes.
And then you, like, it's not something that you scripted.
Correct, but it's something yeah, but that you, I think
then you were
I
like,
directed.
Hey, I gotta go grab a camera. Yeah,
yes.
yeah, yeah, yeah. So then you did have an influence.
Yes.
But yeah, that's we're walking the line here, and I love that because your logical brain, you want to you want the definition as to whether or not this was.
Yes, like I need I need a lot of a structure in my brain.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah, I see. So why don't we define what candid is?
Yes, let's start right there.
So candid is you know what? I have to like preface this by saying I hate the word moment.
Okay.
I think as photographers, we use this ad nauseum
mm-hmm.
and I, it is my life legacy. I've got to find a different word than moment.
Okay.
Just like as a tangent, we've got to do a better job. As photographers describing our work beyond moments, right? Because we're all saying the same thing. And I think if you can define something beyond a moment, that is what's mm-hmm. going to make you stand out.
Okay.
Like as a related sidebar. Okay. So candid is anything that is not directed by the photographer.
Mm-hmm. I don't fit anywhere near that word myself.
So it's very wide open, right? Like
yes.
it is, candid is absolutely anything that is undirected. So even those, even when you're doing portraits and the moments kind of in between those portraits, those are candid moments, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I use the word candid as a gateway drug to documentary.
Okay.
And the thing that makes a candid photo is literally any undirected moment. So the moment doesn't have to be good. It's still, but it's candid, you know?
Okay.
So candid, if candid is like the base definition of anything that a photographer is not directing, then we have to talk about, okay, what is going to make a candid moment that something that is actually good or not good, not the right word, impactful.
Mm-hmm.
And then we start looking at documentary. So okay. Photographers like to mix those words up, mm-hmm. but they're not the same.
So what is documentary?
Okay, so documentary is story. You are telling a story. Mm-hmm. Sometimes candids have a story in them,
mm-hmm.
but they're not necessarily. So, okay, so sometimes documentary, I'm getting my words mixed up. Sometimes candid is documentary.
Mm-hmm.
But documentary is always candid.
Got it.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense.
So you can have candid moments that are not documentary because there's no story there.
Mm-hmm. It's just a casual moment that look.
Yeah, it's just so a casual moment. Mm-hmm. It's someone like looking off into the distance. And sure, you could probably like impress a story upon it. Mm-hmm. But if an uninvolved person looked at that image, and it's just someone looking off into the distance and there's like no perceivable expression or there's nothing like in the background where you could like develop a story.
Mm-hmm.
It's still candid, but it's not documentary. Documentary is they're candids, absolutely. And there is a narrative. There's a story in there that an unrelated person can understand what's going on.
Got it.
Does that make sense?
It makes sense. As before I even became a photographer many years ago, documentary was like my favorite style of photography.
Oh,
I used to like sit in front of the computer just watching Life magazine, like all yeah. this, like yeah. I was just like, oh my God, this is
so captivating.
Cool. It is. And yeah. before I became like a wedding photographer, when I even as a child, when I thought of photographers, and again, context, you know, in Colombia, we don't have like, maybe now it's different, but like when I grew up in Colombia, we didn't have like family portraits. We didn't yeah. go to Sears to get like the glamour shot. We didn't do anything yeah. like that. That was not a part of the culture. So yeah. for me, the only photographers that existed were like photojournalists, like people that yeah. worked for the newspapers, people that were and reported wars, things like that. Those were the only, in my mind, yeah. only photographers. So growing yeah. up, I really like that because he will, you know, tell me a story.
You get to understand what's going on.
I love storytelling as a little kid. So sometimes even seeing a photo, like it's a lot of context, but also I can let my imagination tell the end yeah. of the story that I don't get yeah. to see. So I yeah. really enjoy those, which is very interesting because now that I'm a photographer, I'm like very structured.
Uh-huh.
Not oh, close we have to some things candid. That we can
talk about.
So,
I love it. I love that you have this familiarity with it and this history with it. And yet it doesn't play much into your current work, does it?
Correct. Type A yeah. personality. I can enjoy it for far away, but like I need to have a lot of control when I'm working. I mean, that's the reality and I'm honest about it.
Yeah.
You know? I do feel like sometimes in the industry, there is this a lot of snob between like mm-hmm. documentary and like you're not a documentary photographer, and there is always yeah. like Heidi Almighty people that are yeah. documentary and people that are, you know, a little bit more my style, that is more like straightforward, we're gonna post, we're gonna look pretty. It's kind of like look down a little bit. That's my perception. It's like, oh, you're not good at this, you can, you know, access these emotions. And I don't know, I don't like that either.
Yeah for sure. And I think like we that all comes from a place of like fear, right? Because we're scared that somebody else is going to be better than us, or the survival of the fittest thing is so drilled into our brains that we mm-hmm. we have to judge others to distance them from us. And therefore we can't appreciate what someone else is doing. We have to judge them for it. Like whenever a judgment comes into my brain, I'm now have been able to change my mindset that, okay, there's this judgment that has come in. I feel threatened. So what is threatening about this person to me? And that helps me kind of release that judgment mm-hmm. so that I can try to value their perspective or their work, or it helps me to feel more empathetic to where they're coming from.
Empathy. I love that word. Mm-hmm. So back to candidates and all this good Sorry. Situation. As you can see, my brain is like, we need to get in focus.
Bobby, come back.
So, like, what is it also? Because as you mentioned, you know, there is candid photos, there is documentary moments.
Yeah. So the reason I had mentioned using candid as a gateway drug is because mm-hmm. I think we're all very familiar with that word, with mm-hmm. candid. And it does play nice with documentary. Mm-hmm. If I start talking about documentary, not everyone understands that. Photographers generally understand it, but clients don't necessarily
Correct. Understand yes.
it very well. So that's why I tend to, when I'm speaking to a wider audience, I pull them in with this familiarity of the word candid, and then they can kind of walk along with me as I'm like, oh, hey, Bahir, this is even more interesting. Come into my world. Yeah. Sorry. Did I?
Yeah, no, that's good. Now, I want you to walk me through a wedding, because, like, obviously I have my perception of how a wedding looks for me, what I need to do. Now, you are a documentary photographer.
Yeah.
Walk with me, please. Like, how this whole thing starts, because I am the kind of photographer that, again, as you can tell here, structure. I need everything needs to look pretty. Yeah. Everything needs to look organized, aesthetically pleasing for my eyes.
Yeah.
That is, you know, and those are the kinds of clients that I attract, to Absolutely. Be honest. Like, if you
throw Awesome.
Into a room and you just like start shooting,
yeah,
100% I don't know what to do. The first thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to organize the room. I'm like, I need to clean this. Like, I'm not thinking about photography right now. But yeah. I would like to lean a little bit into that, because I also think that an analogy. I practice a lot of yoga, mm-hmm. right? So I, even though I'm not super flexible, like yoga has allowed me to be physically a little bit more flexible, mentally a little bit more flexible. I yes. do believe that in my work, I'm a little bit stiff. But I'm going to be honest, right? Okay. And I would like a little bit of flexibility to choose at my convenience when I want to yeah. be more candid and when I want to be more structured. So yeah. how yeah. do I get there?
Yeah. Okay. So you have a little bit of a block. You have?
Yes.
Yeah. And so what I would probably encourage you to do is, when you have that impulse, so like you walk into the room and you see a mess somewhere or something that can you feel it in your body? Can you
immediately? I feel it in this conversation. I'm immediately tense.
You're thinking, yeah, I see you like pull up your shoulders.
Yeah, like
okay, so you're familiar with that. You know when it's happening.
Yes.
So you have that awareness. Some people don't even have that awareness. They just have the judgment and they can't connect it to what's actually happening in their brains. So you have that awareness. When you feel that, I would encourage you to just ride it out. So our reaction is, okay, I'm having this feeling. I have to make this feeling stop. Mm-hmm. Instead, just flow with it in the way you would in yoga. Just move into downward dog, come into cobra, just go back and forth a few times so that you are kind of just flowing with it and you're just acknowledging, okay, this is just my conditioning telling me that I have to control this situation. Mm-hmm. My goal today is not to control. Or whatever kind of mantra you're going to bring mm-hmm. into that situation when you feel that thing in your body. I would say, okay, let's prepare for this because it's going to happen. So what can you say to yourself when that feeling comes up? So you say that feeling and then you have to move into that discomfort. So getting comfortable with discomfort is a big skill that mm-hmm. documentary photographers have to learn. People who want to put more candids in their portfolio, you have to learn how to be comfortable in discomfort. Because in order to make a really impactful candid image or an impactful documentary story with your clients, you have to be able to see things that other people don't see mm-hmm. and be willing to put your camera in places that cameras don't normally go. Mm-hmm. Because you need to be able to show it from a different perspective. So if I'm continually doing things that are really safe, I'm cleaning the room as I go in, I'm structuring things so that I feel comfortable, you are taking away the natural story that is already there, because mm-hmm. those people are in that room. They have set things up and done things because that's who they are. Mm-hmm. And when we walk in as photographers, if you're the type of photographer who likes to direct, so you're a director, I'm a documentarian. Mm-hmm. So you walk into a room, you're directing things, you're putting things in the places that you need them to be in order to make the images that you see in your head. Whereas as a documentarian, I walk in and I see things the way my client sees them, rather than me impressing my idea onto her or him or them or whoever. I walk in and I try to see the world. I try to reflect their world back to them with no judgment, no expectations, nothing. I am just photographing your world so that you can savor it later.
I love it. Maybe one day. I don't know. I think as I mentioned, I want to lean in and I think that it's beautiful. Yeah. It's like ice cream flavors. There is a little bit of everything for everybody.
Totally. And it would be fun for you, like if you just did it kind of in a safe way, like, okay, so this is a room that's fairly clean already. So I'm maybe not going to direct her. Or like when you feel that impulse to like direct someone, hold off for 30 seconds and just shoot what you're seeing rather than directing it. Because I think initially, as photographers, especially because there's such an expectation for photographers to tell clients what to do. Like we grow up being told to stop when a camera comes out, we stop what we're doing and we look at the camera.
Correct.
Pretty much everybody who has any, experience with cameras has had that experience, right? Mm-hmm. And you can see it in like 2-year-old kids. They stop what they're doing and they look at the camera. So it starts very early. It lasts our whole life. That is always a plight of a documentarian to like go against that conditioning. Mm-hmm. So you have to create that environment and it really takes a lot of time and trust of your people to be able to understand that this photographer is actually not going to tell me what to do. And that is going to be okay. Cause we actually can get nervous if we're like, what should I do? Like, and I'm just like, do your thing. And people are like, oh my God. And you can see this like look of fear sort of come over their face. Mm-hmm. But when I am calm and moving with them and kind of like reflecting their energy back to them, they settle down. And then that is where the honesty happens, where I can shoot them through things that they're doing without telling them what to do.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I have learned that I don't need that control. I certainly felt like I had to have it in the beginning, right? Mm-hmm. Because we are, as photographers, we're told that we're supposed to tell people what to do and people expect it. But in order to use my voice, because I found out like this thing was always, it always nagged me. I'm like, I don't want to tell you what to do because what you were just doing is way more interesting than what I'm about to do. Like your people are naturally more interesting than me telling you to do something.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So I am just going to hang out.
And I would say tell you what to do. That in my own personal experience, and I've seen this and I have had this conversation here on the podcast with other photographers, even though I'm a very structured photographer, one of the things that I've learned also because of my personality, because I don't like when people come and alter the energy of the place where I am, like yeah, I will never walk into a room and do I clean it? Yes. No. Do I go in and like change per se the energy? Like I never walked in. And if they are listening to like soft music, I never say like, we need to change this because we need to get high. Never.
Yeah.
If they are having a very intimate moment, especially let's say, you know, a bride with, you know, her mom or something that is very intimate, I will never tell them like, you need to smile, don't cry, nothing like that. I have had other conversations with other photographers, but like, no, I'm directing the whole thing. So no. I do lean a little bit into like the room, what's happening.
Yeah.
I just try to control other little things. But yes. Yeah, but you crying is beautiful. Let me get this bottle of water out of the way.
Let me wipe your nose. I think like we all, especially wedding photographers, we're in such unique positions because we have to know how to do everything, right?
Yes.
We have to know how to do portraits. We have to know how to shoot events, like high energy dance floors. We have to be candid photographers. Essentially, we all are drawn to the story of our couple. So we definitely have documentary leanings. We're all of it. And so the difference is that some of us are more drawn to certain vibes of the day than others, right?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Am I good at dance photos? For my clients, I am, but I think I'm so much better at portraits because I know how to control that situation. But again, as you said, and as the topic of this podcast is like how to, you know, use candids to help you book more clients, I think that I do need to lean more into like my candids. And I think that eventually with time, as I get better, that might turn into, as you mentioned, a little bit more documentary. Yeah. And I think that's very, very special. And in my mind, I'm always like, I want to do this. Yes, it's an idea. Because once the wedding comes, like I have my list, I have my paper, I need my organization.
Oh my gosh, we are so different. I love it. I would love to shoot a wedding with you because it would just
I would
be,
love to shoot a wedding so with cool. you.
Friend, this is a short podcast intermission to remind you that every month I am uploading actionable short tutorials about SEO, blogging, content creation, website reviews, and much more on my Patreon. Each tutorial has a very specific goal to help you level up an aspect of your business. You can access these tutorials at any time and as many times as you need to. In addition, each month I am also hosting a live call where you can ask any questions regarding your business or marketing strategies. This is like having a tiny coaching call with me. You can currently access over 50 tutorials for only $10 a month. Join today. I have a direct link on the notes of this episode for you to check it out. Now, back to the episode.
I actually photographed a friend of mine came. I rarely second shoot because I don't like it because I'm like, it's not my wedding. I have no control, so I can't do this. But this fellow photographer came from Spain and I was like, can I just go? I mean, like, I just want to go see. Like, I don't want to shoot. I just want to see. And he's like, no, don't be silly. Bring your camera. He's like, zero stress because you're not supposed to be here technically. So whatever, do whatever you want.
Yeah.
I got a migraine. I am not.
I was like, you were paralyzed, weren't you?
I was just like, I'm like, what's next? He's like, I don't know. Whatever. I'm like, what do you mean whatever? Like, what's going on with these photos? Like, we need some bridal photos. We need like some wedding party. He's like,
oh my God, Carolina, it's so freeing. It's so, documentary is so freeing.
I don't think my personality is for a documentary, but maybe I need to lean in a little bit because I do see the beauty of it. Yes.
Yeah. So using candids to book more clients, the reason that I am, this totally works, first of all, is because candids are always, always, always different.
Correct.
Posed photos can look very similar.
Oh, yes, obviously. Yes.
So clients get a little confused. Not maybe not confused. Photographers can blend together if all they're doing is showing portraits, right? When you show a candid photo, that is by nature of it being candid, it's going to stand out because it is not a posed photo or it's not a portrait. Even like unscripted portraits, they're still portraits, you know? And yes, couples are looking for portraits, but when they start seeing candids, they're like, oh yeah, my wedding is more than just the portraits. So what else do I want to experience at my wedding? Like that sort of natural thought process, or like as the photographer experts, we are leading our clients into seeing their wedding in other dimensions than just the portraits, right? So if you already have candids in your galleries, like you already have them, the act that I'm encouraging photographers to do is to put them into your portfolio, because candids are very much specific to the people you're photographing, right? Like their gestures and their expressions and the actual interaction that they're having, those are going to be quite unique between the two people or three or hundreds of people having them. So by nature, candids never really look the same because what's happening is always just a little bit different, right?
Correct.
Whereas portraits we can get really lost in that sea of portraits. If you throw in a horizontal interactive candid moment, it's going to pop out. It's going to draw in someone who would be interested in that. And that's what we're always trying to do in our marketing, right? Is we're trying to draw in people who are interested in how we see the world.
Correct.
Candids, by nature of them being candid, are different. You're going to shoot that differently than I would. That is going to naturally show the way you see a situation. And if we went through some of your galleries, Carolina, I bet I could tell you what your voice is just by looking at your candids.
Type A.
Look,
that's what
the
you
look
would
of
say.
Shock on your face.
You would be, she's type A.
Enneagram 8. Do you know your Enneagram?
So, this is so funny because I actually have an episode about this, Enneagrams. And I do not have the patience for the 120 question this questionnaire has. Like, I'm like, give me my top five. So even though I have never done one, we had agreed that I'm an 8.
Yes. Yeah. It's funny because I'm an 8 as well.
What?
Isn't that interesting?
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, again, mine is just like me, the person that I had on the podcast, she's like an expert on it. So she was laughing because I'm like, just
tell me. I think I listened to that episode actually. because I mean, you totally sound like an 8, but isn't that cool how
I'm going to have to do those 150 questions, but what a pain
you're
in the
ass. You're going to have to. Tell you.
Like, that's another thing. And maybe that's another thing from type A's that I'm just like, I don't have patience. Mm-hmm. Tell me exactly what it is now. Don't give me fluff. And I feel like for candidates, you need to sit through the fluff. You need to sit there. You need to sit and be comfortable in that moment.
Yes. Yeah. You're totally right. Absolutely. So, so if you're not comfortable with candidates, it means that you're not comfortable in the moment. You're not comfortable waiting.
I'm not comfortable. I'm comfortable in the moment. It's not comfortable waiting.
Yeah.
And I also myself, I reflect a lot of like my own fears into my clients, right? So like for me, I myself, sometimes I don't like candid food. Like I don't like strangers photographing me.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So sometimes I'm with my clients, I'm like, are they comfortable? And I'm like, damn it, they hired me. Of course they're comfortable, Carolina. Do your damn job.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So,
yes. So people are like analyzing me right now. They're like, let's dive deeper.
Carolina, I can help.
But yes, it's interesting because I do see, you know, like I see obviously when I, even in my own Instagram feed, like it is very structured and I love it. But every now and then in a carousel, I don't start with like a candid photo, but like I threw a candid in there just for my own discomfort. And then people love those, but I'm
they do.
I'm like, is this going to be a photo that I'm going to post on their own? I don't know. It's just me. Like I need to work on it. I don't think that my clients are really.
Well, I mean, if you want to work on it, that's one thing that's something you could try like today, unless you have your posts all like scheduled out and.
Oh, it's a schedule and it is not attended.
Okay. So if we really wanted to like push your boundaries, get comfortable with discomfort. Later today, just post a candid photo.
Yeah, we're going to get back to this later. I do like a lot of structure, but like, again, but this is not about me. We have an audience. People are listening to this. So.
But you know, what's interesting though, is that lots of photographers listening to this feel the same way that you do.
Probably.
And so this a little challenge would go to any of them. Any of you who kind of shudder at going outside of your posting schedule or your posting format, if you usually do verticals, throw in a horizontal, all of that helps us to get more comfortable with being uncomfortable or the perception that we're uncomfortable, right? Because you described how your people, you think that your people are uncomfortable. That's just our own perception. That's
absolutely.
A rat in the cage up there that is trying to make us deal with something that is going on internally. And the only way to slow that rat down is to do something that you think will trigger it. But in fact, it will settle it down. Because you will learn that, oh, I survived that. Oh, it's totally fine. Oh, look at this. People love this photo. And then you're like, you feel this like rush of dopamine because you're okay. Like this situation that you were scared of letting go of is actually fine. It's actually pretty good. Maybe I'll do it again, you know?
Yes, definitely. now that we're talking and my brain, you know, like I'm thinking about this. Obviously, the thing with candids for me, and maybe for photographers that are like me, right, is that I see the moment.
Yeah.
I take it. Yeah. No, some, I'm going to be honest here. Half of the times when I get a good candid, I didn't notice when I take it. I'm going to be 100% honest. Like I noticed in post-production. I'm like, God damn, this looks really, really good.
Damn, I did good.
Exactly. Yeah. So in my brain, I'm like, this is perfect. I love it.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, it's a candid. Not everybody's going to see it the same way, right? As we, you know, we already spoke about it. Like people have like different feelings towards a candid photo. A photo that I post, I don't know exactly what people are going to see and how they're going to feel. Yeah. So I think that even now, ooh, look at this self-analyzing that I'm doing here. Even when I look at the candid, then I'm like, I don't know how this is going to be received, even if I love it.
Mm-hmm. And why does that matter?
Dang, Instagram ruining it. It's ruined all this because I can guarantee you if there is no likes, if there is no comments, if I'm just posting because I love, then it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's good or if it's bad. Like if there is no like algorithm, if there is no like likes and comments, nothing, it's just a photo that I post that I loved and that's it. There is nothing else. Because really at the end of the day, it's about what I love, but also I'm running a business. So it's about what my clients are going to love. It's a conundrum we have in here.
Well, it's only a conundrum because you're not sharing what matters to you. You're doing what you think matters to your clients. And I believe that those two things should be the same.
Yep. I'm processing all this. These conversations are always very interesting because I don't know where we're going.
Yeah, you're not controlling it.
Exactly. I'm like, well, getting sweaty.
Totally. We're getting somewhere good. We're starting to sweat.
So interesting. Yeah. So, okay. So how can you tell? No. Now I need the analytic part of this.
Yeah.
You're in a situation. You're photographing it. I mean, you've done this for a decade. So your brain is strained, right? Mm-hmm. But like somebody that is like me, I'm immediately judging.
Yeah.
Is this going to be good? Is this really, if I had gotten a different angle, oh my God, the moment is gone. Now I can get it never again. Like how do I relax in a situation?
Yeah. It takes practice.
Practice. Okay.
It takes permission.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to give yourself permission to work on it and to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And it will come the more you allow yourself to be like, okay, I'm just going to play with this. You have to be able to play. You have to give yourself permission to play. And you're approaching your weddings with a vision and a purpose and a very direct focus.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas candids are much more about just playing with what's going on, flowing with what's happening. Cobra, downward dog. Like you're just moving back and forth. I'm going to shoot this like this. Was it good? Doesn't matter. I'm just playing. And that's where you get the best images. There's definitely I coach people in finding muscle memory in terms of how to work a scene so that they can make the best like documentary photo. But if you're just moving into feeling more comfortable shooting candids, then giving yourself permission to just let things happen. Like choose a moment in the day where you feel that urge to control something and then say, no, I'm just going to let this one play out and I'm just going to photograph it as it is.
But you just said something very interesting that is like said, now I can't quote you exactly, but like documentary, right? There is something that's happening. And because you have trained your brain, you know which angle is going to be best. You know exactly where you're going to stand. That is going to tell a better story.
Yeah.
So you're technically directing yourself, aren't you?
I'm directing myself, but I'm not directing my clients. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. Oh, that's a really good observation. Yes. I often describe this to my clients as well. Like it is not your job to put yourself in the best position for this image. It's up to me to put myself in the right spot to photograph this image.
And this is something that you just get with time and practice. With time,
yeah, and analyzing your work, like
analyzing you.
your
Would you say that it is healthy to have somebody else critique your work, or do you think that that could also be
100%?
Okay,
absolutely. Okay. Everyone should get their work critiqued. It is the best way to grow as an artist.
Mm.
Absolutely. Like in the same way that you would get help with your business, mm-hmm. we need help with our art. Because again, we have this crazy internal dialogue all the time that is impressed in there with social conditioning and expectations or that we think other people have. We don't even know if they have them. They're just these perceptions of what people think we should be doing. So that crap is like fogging the art that we create. If you have your work critiqued, a person who's really good at this will be able to look through your gallery and be like, okay, that's actually your voice. This is what makes you unique. These are the images that really are speaking to the experience and perspective that you're bringing to the situation. We can cut through the crap. It's like people have editors, like authors have editors, photojournalists have editors, because they can see beyond the attachment that you have to your work. We are all so attached to our work. Mm-hmm. Or like we make an image, we worked so hard to make it. We put it in our portfolio because we worked so hard to make it, but it can still be a shit image. Like, and someone else, like we have that emotional attachment to it, or because we really, really love this person that we are photographing.
Correct.
Doesn't mean it's a good photo. And your editor or your the person that you've hired to do this with can help you to see the images that are just falling flat and the ones that really speak to what you're bringing to the world.
Good. I'm really good at those critiques for like post things. So like when I work with my students, I'm like, this is good, you know, this is whatever.
Yeah.
Now I just have to get my work critique. Yeah.
Yeah.
And to do that, you have to sit on the hot seat.
So you know what I do? I do something called shoot shadowing.
Uh-huh.
And so we would get together and you would give me your Lightroom catalog, uh-huh. unedited, unculled,
uh-huh.
nothing, like absolute, absolutely open. And uh-huh. I would go through it with you. I would go through it and I would describe what I see,
uh-huh.
What you're not seeing, what you missed, what you nailed. And it's such an effective way to understand your own work.
I have to get into this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really fun. It is super vulnerable.
Oh, yes.
But it is extremely effective.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to look into this. Well, we've been talking here for a while now. I got a little bit vulnerable, which I never do. So
thank you.
That was fun. So because again, this is a marketing podcast and I always yes. have to bring it back into it.
Let's do it.
What is one marketing tip that has helped you, especially as a documentary photographer? I feel like sometimes you guys are more like, you know, go with the wind, you know, let's see what happens. But I know it's not, because there has to be a structure somewhere.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And so that structure is getting really, really clear on what am I bringing to the table?
Mm-hmm.
What am I showing in my work that is going to connect with the people that I want to attract? So all photographers need to do this. I have to show the images that I want people to be attracted to. I cannot show photos that I think people will like. So I want to attract those who are going to love me and repel the people who are tepid about me. I want people to hate my work and I want people to love it. So no more of this like wishy-washy, like semi-cold water that mm-hmm. most of us are swimming in. Your work has to be, if you want to be consistently booked with clients that you align with, and if you haven't even thought about this, lots of people don't even think about this. They just build their business and they're like, yeah, I'm getting work. But as you go on, that's going to get really tiring and it's going to be really hard to raise your prices if you're just taking all the people who want to hire you, you have to start looking at your images, the work that you're creating. Think about shooting for your potential clients, not the client that you currently have.
And for people that struggle with curating their own work, because we just spoke about this 2 seconds ago, you said like, well, I love it. I love them as people. And I think this picture is so amazing. But again, somebody will tell you like, this is not that great for future clients. How could they like get to that point that to understand how to curate their work?
You need a coach.
You need a coach.
Yeah, honestly, it is not something you can do by yourself. You can't, and you can't get it in a free Facebook group. True. You have to invest in that. And as photographers, as creatives, we are often so reluctant to invest in ourselves. And we tend to move towards the things that I can download quickly. I can read this. I can do this on my own. We tend to kind of be lone wolves in our editing cave. You need to get into a group atmosphere with a coach so that you can learn from each other, and that coach can guide you in the way that you are not seeing, because we have blinders on about ourselves, again, because of all that, of our own social conditioning. You have to find someone you vibe with and invest 3 to 6 months with that person.
So talking about coaching,
only way to do it.
Tell us a little bit about what you do.
Oh, okay. This is exactly what I do, actually. And it's funny because being an Enneagram 8 and being super logical, like I used to call myself Spock because I would not feel emotion. Like everything had to be 100% logical. Mm-hmm. And I was unable to evolve as an artist because I was a photographer and there was a right and a wrong to everything. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of that's how I got into documentary, because there is definitely there's a perception about rights and wrongs in terms of composition and technical and blah, 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 and f-stops and all that stuff. Like it definitely has all of that stuff in there. But in order to be able to tell a story, you have to be an artist, right? You have to be able to connect with the emotions of your clients. So I just finished enrollment for my current group mentorship program. It's called Storyteller School. Mm-hmm. And what I do is I take a small group of 5 people, and people who want to become better storytellers, better document, who are really interested in the documentary genre and they're not necessarily sure how to like make that transition, or they just want to include more meaningful images in their work, or they want to feel more, they want to kind of scratch that itch of like, how do I become better at making like complicated stories in one rather than just portraits, right? Mm-hmm. So we spend about half the time, we talk a lot about art, we talk about composition, we talk about technique, we talk about story. And the other half of the time, we talk all about the business of running a photography business. How do you market yourself? How do you build your SEO? How do you attract those clients with what you're showing in order to make the money that you want to make? So my logical brain and my art brain in this decade of my life have finally dovetailed. And now I'm running a super successful photography business, shooting only the weddings and families that I want to photograph, because I've worked so hard at developing my voice and my technical prowess and building my business. And so now I'm like, it's possible. Like I never thought it was possible. Like I live in a town of 10,000. How could I ever charge $10,000 for a wedding? Mm. I can, because I've figured out all of this stuff. So my Storyteller School takes aspiring documentarians or people who've been in it for a while. And I teach them, we talk all about technique, but we really, really, really hone in on finding what makes you unique and building a fulfilling, sustainable business around that.
I love that, because nobody needs to be a starving artist. That's not
No, God, no.
That era is over.
It's over. That is a myth impressed upon us by people who are really into the survival of the fittest thing.
Absolutely not. I do believe that people have the right to make a good living. And I think that as a photographer, you can make even more than a good living if, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally. Oh, it's so good. You also have a fantastic podcast, especially for people that like deep conversations. So I know all of you here, you like very pragmatic conversations, but maybe a deep conversation is also needed.
Yeah, it's so funny because I come from that world of being super pragmatic and logical. And now I'm like, hey, it's real fun over here being less logical. And less
is it? Oh, we'll see. We'll talk in 5 years. To the Let's dark see where side. I am.
Yeah, like I'm a Virgo Enneagram 8. Like everything says like boss analysis, like I must be in control. But it doesn't have to be like that. And it's really nice not to be. But anyways, my podcast. So my podcast is the Tilt and Shift Photography Business Podcast. On Instagram, it's Tilt and Shift Podcast. And I talk with industry leaders, not about their work. I talk with them about the moments in their life where they had an impactful perspective shift. So the little metaphor or like the, I guess it's an analogy, play on words, entendre, of like, you know, when you kind of like tilt your head a little bit and you're like, oh, I didn't think of it like that. And then this shift happens where you can no longer do the things that you used in the way that you used to do them. So that's what I talk with industry leaders about, is like, where are the moments or the seasons in your life where something kind of did a bit of a 180 or a 90 degree turn where things really changed for you? And for some people, that's in their business and the way they looked at their business. For other people, it is in their personal life, and then that plays into their business. It's just really fun being able to talk with people about things that really matter, you know?
It's a very cool podcast. I listened to a couple of episodes and yeah, I liked them. I was like, oh, this is very personal, but I'm here. I like it.
I can listen to this by myself.
Absolutely. Bobby, you are a pleasure to talk to. I can't wait to connect, you know, further with you. I'm going to link to all your things here on the, you know, on the notes of this episode. Thank you so much for your time. Oh, one thing that I have to ask. What are you currently loving?
What am I currently loving? I am a budding gardener.
Okay.
So I have this harvest of spaghetti squash that I am so proud of.
Delicious.
And you would have been very uncomfortable in my backyard because my spaghetti squash, I planted like, I think I planted 6 plants. They grew throughout my entire yard. They grew up my apple tree. They just took over and I was like, all right. I'm going to reap this later. And I think it's a really beautiful metaphor for our business.
I tell you, because I planted watermelons once and I'm like, never again. This is a hot mess.
it's so big and it's so uncontrolled. Oh my gosh. Okay. So here's your assignment is to plant another watermelon and just let it grow. Let it grow and look at it without judgment.
We'll see. Oh my God. Well, so many, maybe assignments I got from this, but it was a pleasure.
You have to go through and write them down.
Exactly. It was a pleasure talking to you. And for all of you that listen all the way to the end, thank you so much. Go subscribe to her podcast. It's really fun. And I'll catch you next week with another amazing guest. Until then, ciao.
Ciao.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. For more info about marketing tips for photographers and show notes, please visit thetogrepublic.com. If you enjoyed today's show, please go to iTunes and leave us a review. Want even more? Join our marketing community group. Just search for The Tog Republic Group on Facebook. Until next week.